members, are we happy to make a start? I would like to welcome everyone to the meeting today. Can everyone hear me clearly? Members of the public should remain seated throughout the meeting and should not speak. Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are either turned off or switched to silent. The use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio recorded, except where the council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. I remind councillors of their obligations under the Councillors' Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interest which they have in any item of business before the meeting today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the table for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. So members, that deals with the formalities. And we've got one apology today, and that is from Councillor Brown. And I would like, just as the chair, just to wish everyone a happy new year. And we'll now move on to the second item, which is the declaration of interest. So has anybody a conflict with any item of business on today's agenda? No. I would like, as chair, just to declare conflict or an interest in item 5. But it's an item for noting, and unless members wish to have a discussion, I intend to stay for that. And I also want just to, on a precautionary basis, just declare an interest on item 18, and that's to do with the internal audit report on the SPU governance of grants. It's just that the report does mention the SUPB, and whilst it's not a report from the SUPB, as a member of the audit committee at the SUPB, I just want to maybe just flag that up today as well. But again, I don't see any conflict as such in staying for that item. Members, so that's the declarations of interest. The next item on the agenda then is the action sheet. If we just go to the action sheet, I think all of the actions outstanding or other on the agenda today are have been completed. There's just two actions that have been carried over from previous meetings. One is to do with prompt payments, so that is on the agenda today, and the other one is to do with Extreme, and we will be dealing with a report on the big screen later on in the meeting. So are members content that the action sheet has been actioned? Yeah, okay. And are you content to remove those that are marked for removal? And could I have a proposal and seconder for that, please? Opposed and seconded. Thank you, Councillor Devlin. So the next item then is item 4, which is the Audit Committee self-assessment for 2017-18. This is something that was discussed at the last meeting, and it was agreed that I would take the lead in this as the chair of the committee. And as part of that lead, I have completed the National Audit Office best practice questionnaire, and I circulated it to members for comment. So I think the report today and the attached appendix, which deals with the detailed questionnaire that was completed, the members can take assurance with the number of good practice questions that have been answered yes, demonstrating that the Audit Committee is following best practice and operating effectively. Also, in terms of the Audit Committee's terms of reference, that's something that should be reviewed on an annual basis, and to ensure that really it encompasses the work of the Audit Committee and is aligned with good practice and business needs. And again, as chairperson, I'm content to give that annual assurance today to members. There's only a small number of improvements and recommendations One of them is just to do a bespoke training course on the audit committee in-house. And I've asked really that Doreena and Jared looks at that, and the appropriate time to do that will be whenever the new audit committee is formed, which will be after the AGM. Similar to last year, we're asking really that the parties, whenever they're nominating members to the committees, that that consideration is given to the continuity issue, which is important to the audit committee. That doesn't mean that we're asking that really that there should be the same members that serve for a full 4 years, but where possible, you want to try and keep a continuity from year to year, because the work of the audit committee is covered over a 4 year term, and training likewise rather than having to refresh and renew that every year. So that's the other recommendation. And then just to that officers strive to ensure that all papers are provided on a timely basis. And I'm very happy, and when we spoke at our pre-meeting about the timeliness of the papers that we're receiving, and we're receiving those in time. So thanks everybody for their efforts at making sure that those papers are sent out on time. So members, that's the item four, the audit committee. So are members happy to note? Yeah. And we'll now move on to item five. Could we also ask for an approval for that? I just think on the basis that it is the audit committee's self-assessment, could I ask for an approval proposed, councillor? And second, thank you. So we'll now move on to item five.
Thank you, Chair. Members, you'll be aware that at the audit committee last year we agreed. Would review the performance of the chairman using the National Audit Office Best Practice Checklist. This is something which was carried out last year, and we have repeated that exercise this year. So both Councillor Casey and the Chief Executive independently completed a checklist, and following on from that, Chief Executive and myself met with the chairman to provide him feedback on his performance. And I'm pleased to be able to say that both checklists clearly demonstrated that the performance of the chairperson during the last year has aligned to the best practice guidance as set out by the National Audit Office. So members are asked to note the contents of this report.
Okay, members, thanks for that, Doreena. That moves on to item six, which is the corporate risk register, and Doreena, you're going to take that.
Yes, of course. Thank you, Chair. Members, you'll see from the report in front of you that, and you'll be aware, the SMT routinely review the corporate risk register on a quarterly basis. We decided, however, to run a risk management workshop, being sort of 1 year into our new risk management regime. And there's been quite a lot of changes in the last year. So on the 30th of November, the senior management team, facilitated by the Audit Services Manager, had a half-day workshop. And basically, this is a very detailed drill-down into the corporate risk register by the members of the SMT. We reviewed each of the risks in some detail. We considered those risks in the context of each of the individual risk registers, and looked at the highest risks contained within the considered to the corporate risk register. We also looked to the quarterly assurance statements that each directorate produced, and again looking at the areas of risk highlighted in those. And then we did an exercise commonly referred to as horizon scanning, so looking out into the future as to how the current and the future landscape is changing and how that might affect the risk profile of this organisation. So on the back of that, you'll see that we made a number of key changes to the corporate risk register, and hopefully you'll also see that the changes reflect the changing landscape that we've had this year, with a number of internal audit reports and progress in certain areas. section and the changes that we've made. I don't propose to read that through. I'll take that as read for you, but happy to take any questions on it. Assurance statement regime is still operating well. They're being completed quarterly, and at present the assistant directors are completing theirs for the quarter ended December 17, and directors will submit those to the chief executive at the end of this month. You'll also note that we revised our risk management policy, and that was ratified by council in November 17, having been considered by the SCNR committee. The revision of that largely makes it a lot more user-friendly, we haven't really lost anything in the revision, but we've updated it to reflect any points which internal audit made in their review. And one of the things you'll see is there's a new section on risk appetite, and our risk register has been updated to incorporate a risk appetite for each risk. We've included that as an appendix for your information, and as I say, it has been considered in detail by SCNR. So happy to take any comments or questions on any of the risks, and we're asking you today to consider and to approve the changes to the corporate risk register.
Councillor Hardy. Councillor Hardy has proposed to do with a seconder for the, and what we're doing here is approving the changes that are outlined in section 2.1.
To second that as well. And you know, it's good to see that at the CR13 where we can de-escalate that because the policies have now been introduced.
Yeah.
Happy to second.
Okay, members, so we've got a proposer and seconder there, and just to welcome the changes to the risk management policy. I think that's a very good document, and it's also good to see that the corporate risk register is evolving. It's a live document. Thank you.
Can I just ask one question?
Sorry,
just in respect of the actual corporate risk register, maybe this isn't the appropriate forum, but maybe during it, in terms of the harmonisation process, I know that was in 9 of the corporate risk register. At what stage are we at in terms of that, probably near completion, or?
Sorry, Laura, what?
The actual corporate risk register talks about the number 9, I think there's. Yeah, maybe staff and structure, where I'm at. Page 9, I think, Serena. The staff and structure and the resources. And we talk about the harmonisation. At what stage are we at in the harmonisation process? Are we? Just more of a general question.
Yeah. So you're basically talking about looking at bringing one set of terms and conditions for the organisation. It's something that we are looking at a senior management level at this point. We're starting with a piece of work in RTS, it's something that we will hope to progress over the course of the next year. So something that we're actively working on at this point.
And do we believe that by the end of this mandate, for example, that harmonisation process will all be complete, or is it?
We would like to think so. Now, I don't like using the term harmonisation, but we would hope so. But as you'll be aware, there is quite a process to go through with regard to engaging with the workforce and engaging with trade union side. So it's sometimes difficult to put an end date on it, but it's something certainly which we are actively working on and would hope to see progress on within the next year.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks for that, Councillor Devlin. So we'll move on now to item 7, fraud and whistleblowing update. Chair.
Thank you, Chair. So the purpose of this paper is just to provide an update of any new cases or any updates from the last committee on fraud and whistleblowing. So there was no new fraud cases since the last committee. However, there were two new whistleblowing cases. One of the cases involves health and safety concerns at Newry Leisure Centre. So There's an independent investigation ongoing at the minute and are awaiting a final report, but management were made aware of the health and safety concerns. The second allegation was in relation to certain members of staff using work time to complete private work. However, these allegations were not substantiated, so the case is now closed. Just to provide an update then on the governance awareness sessions which have taken place throughout the council in October and November 17. So these sessions were run because since the summer of 2017 there was a number of new policies in fraud, whistleblowing, gifts and hospitality. So there was 12 sessions which took place at a number of different sites throughout the council. Each session was introduced by a member of the senior management team to show setting the tone from the top and a culture of openness and accountability within the council. So the sessions covered fraud, corruption and bribery, whistleblowing, gifts and hospitality and conflicts of interest. And at the end of each session there was a chance for staff members to ask questions and there was quite a bit of feedback in each session. As well as the in-house session, the audit office came in the middle of December 2017 and delivered a more detailed session to both the senior management team and the corporate management team, and councillors were also invited to attend. Thanks.
Sorry, Chair. Sorry for coming later. I suppose anecdotally, maybe or from some way talk, I suppose around some staff members, maybe is that's how these things are actually investigated. Where, you know, I've heard tell of people being reported for carrying out actions which they're fairly sure that they're correct in doing it, but yet they don't come to any conclusion. So, you know, is there some we need to be looking at from a point of view of how we investigate incidents? And I don't want to get into any specifics of what has been highlighted to me, but there has been cases where, and maybe multiple involved in an individual who just doesn't seem to be, the investigations never seem to find the person guilty.
I would issue a word of caution and just an acting on anecdote, but what we report to you is everything that's been reported to us and that we have investigated. We investigate in line with our policy, and so basically we're looking for evidence to substantiate any allegations or any anecdotal evidence brought to us. We're not investigating anything that we don't highlight here, and similarly, we, you know, whilst there is a facility for our staff to whistleblow, and we've been out as part of these training sessions saying that we will investigate any issues coming to our attention, that's all we can do is investigate in line with policy and look for the evidence to substantiate what comes in front of us. People don't often see the results and the conclusions of our investigations, and that can be very frustrating for anyone who has been involved, but we do have obligations to protect them, the investigation, to protect the people involved in that as well. So quite often people make their own conclusions on these things as well, you know. So I would issue a word of caution and act in an anecdote, because I've heard some things anecdotally which I know not to be true myself, you know.
Yeah.
So, but to give the audit committee assurance, we investigate in line with our policies and procedures, which you'll all have a copy of.
Aye, that's really what it's asking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for that, Councillor Moran. Just one question for me to you, Chair. Again, to welcome the mandatory training that's taken place, but would you have any indication of what the uptake has been on the mandatory training? And I know that you've run 12 sessions, but can you give us any indication of what the uptake
is? At the minute, HR have all attendance sheets, so there was attendance logs, but they haven't got back in with actual numbers.
Yeah.
But in the region, around 400 attended.
Okay, thank you. So that's item 7. On to item 8, which is the direct award contracts. And is it yourself, Jared?
Yeah.
Ken, sorry, I was going to take that. Thank you, Chair. This report is for consideration and noting. Direct award contracts, or sometimes referred to as single tender actions, occur when a contract has been awarded to a supplier without competition. It is considered good practice to bring these direct award contracts to the attention of the Audit Committee. In the third quarter of this financial year, there were 10 awarded as direct award contracts, which are listed on page 73. The total, $157,545. In rolling out training on the new procurement policy, special attention will be given to the officers so that they can be aware of the requirements around single tender actions or DACs. The analysis of the detail of these 10, as I said, can be seen on the page 73. I don't intend to go through each of them line by line. The first column gives an idea as to what the product was. The fourth column gives the reasoning behind the single tender action. The next column gives the company that it was supplied from, and the rest of the details was how the purchase order and who requested it and who signed off on the single tender action. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks for that, Kim. Members, any comments, questions?
Thank you, Chair. Just one question for Ken. Ken, see item number 33, the theatre conference facility study. What exactly was that?
Councillor Devlin, that was a piece of a study that was carried out looking at the market requirements for a theatre's conference facility in Newry, and it was carried out in the context of our consideration of the Newry Civic Centre project and what should be scoped within that project. So a piece of work was carried out to look at the existing theatre conference facility, i.e. the Newry Town Hall, and what, if any, additional capacity is needed in Newry to meet the market need with regard to theatre and conferencing facilities. So it's a piece of work that has been taken back to the Strategic Projects Working Group.
It does seem quite high if you're looking at maybe obviously the figures of usage that the one of our buildings do have and what the potential is. It seems quite... That's okay. Thank you.
Okay, members, just a couple of questions that I have. I think it's very, very useful. Later on, we've got an update on procurement, which details the procurement policy, and usefully within the procurement policy, it does get out the policy for single tender actions. I note from going down through it, there's one or two where there did seem to be some element of competition, but I think there may have been some difficulties, Ken, and that's the reason why they're on this report. So if you could maybe address that. And the other thing is that really that there's three, number 39, 41 and 42, which are on it because of 10 prices, but looking at them, there would appear to be that there should have been sufficient time to forward plan and ensure that there would have been a competition for those three. And I note that within the procurement policy, you know, that it specifically excludes those as reasons for single tender action, so it'll be important to have that addressed going forward. And then the third question is to do with the HP equipment for IT from BT, and there seems to be some issue on that, if there was just maybe some clarity on what exactly that was for.
Okay. Chair, I'll answer those for you. Your first point, I think, is really addressing those numbered 33 and 35, and you'll see from the reasoning provided. This is one which we debated ourselves. It made its way on to the record that we keep of direct award contracts on the basis that a respondent was really, there's really only one respondent, but actually other companies were circulated. So we had this debate with the procurement team and really just felt in the interest of openness that we would bring it to your attention anyway. But arguably you could discount these two because competition was at least attempted. Your second point with regard to timing, I agree completely, and certainly this is what Ken has alluded to. There is still a piece of work for us to do, and we intend to do it through our training to make sure that our staff do not see single tender action as a way to not forward think and forward plan with regard to timing. You will understand the importance around the opening of the new Newry Leisure Centre. There was a lot going on, and I know in this case staff did really see the need to get these three things done very quickly. But your point is correct, and timing should not be a reason for it. You'll also be aware that we are holding a recommendation from the Northern Ireland Audit Office about having a more fulsome contract register, and that is another way of addressing this point where we can see contracts that are coming to an end in advance, and that's something that we're actively working on. Item 36, HP equipment. This is one that you'll see I actually authorised. What happened here was that we went to competitive tender. HP won a tender. This is to provide these tablet-type devices, a number of tablet-type devices. A and BT then supplied the wrong tablets. When we pointed that out to them, the correct tablets had actually gone up in price, but they agreed to honour our order at the reduced price. We had to raise another purchase order for that, and we had to do it by way of single tender action to get that value and that lower price for the organisation. So that's why there it had been a competitive tender to begin with, and then because the supplier had problems, we got the benefit of the value of those, but had to do it by way of single tender action. So I signed it off on that basis.
Okay. Thanks for that, Dorina. Any other questions, comments?
Chair, just on the it's 33 again, just as an example. The three companies were asked to submit a return. Do these things not go on to eHub? Or be advertised? Just they've been asked. We went out and actually asked three companies to tender. Has it been restricted only to those three companies?
I think there's a number of different processes, but you can have a restricted process when it's under 30,000. So you can actually invite four companies, but then anybody who has a Zonny Hub can also see it and apply, or you can leave it open to every company. So technically it is open to every company, but you know of four companies who specialise in it, so you can invite them, four companies, but it's open to other companies who are on eHub also.
I think in the case of this particular one as well, I know from discussions with the director involved at the time, there isn't a huge market of companies carrying out this quite specific piece of work, because I recall at the time Marie had to approach other organisations to try and find companies who were in this market and who had carried this out. So I think this is quite a specific piece of work. But as Jerry said, it would have been visible and open to others over and above those three, but three of them were probably asked to tender specifically.
And did we really need to have this piece of work done? I thought we'd decided that we were going to have a conference facility.
I think this is to scope the size of the conference facility required. Mm-hmm. Do you want to come in on that?
Okay, members.
Jen, it's probably the strategic projects working group is probably more of me, but this here, the issue is we need to put together a business case as part of the wider bidding process in terms of looking at a private-public partnership for Pierre Conference Centre. The issue is that we've got the town hall and the arts centre within it. So how do they fit with that? Charcoal Blue have specialised in the vision of theatre space and modern theatre space. So that was the rationale for them there. It's the first step. We need to put together a business case, but we need to scope out what exactly is required, what is the demand, what is the All-Ireland position in terms of this type of theatre and conference space. So do we look at a 1,000-seater stadium to actually provide major concerts? Is there a need for that there? How could it complement our centres? Are our centres indeed? So it's quite a technical piece of work. So it's actually getting that to sort of, first of all, to satisfy us that there is a need before we go out to the private sector on an open bid as part of the, in terms of joint venture, what we have to specify. So we're quite secure that there is a need before we actually go to that stage. That's the rationale for it. So it was to try and do that piece of work. I don't actually think that the paper actually would come into the next strategic projects on it. I think it's at that stage. I don't think it's come to them as yet. Yeah, I haven't actually seen the finalised report yet. Yeah, sort of on to it, yeah.
Okay, thanks for that, Liam. Members content to move on. Next item is item 9, which is the update on audit recommendations. And Gerard, you're going to take us through this one.
Thank you, Chair. So this is just an update on the 2015-16 internal audit recommendations. And then at the September committee, it was agreed, based on the audit office advice, to provide an update on their two reports of those charges of governance. So in relation to the 15-16 internal audit recommendations, good progress has been made. We fully implemented 30, partially implemented 5. 5 are no longer applicable, and 1 is not yet due for implementation. Of the 5 no longer applicable, 4 of them are in relation to a planning audit, internal audit planning audit in 15-16. These points have now been superseded, and there's a draft planning 2017-18 report. There's a typo on the table where it says not implemented 1. That shouldn't be there. It's built into the not applicable. In relation to the audit office recommendations, the 2015-16 report to those charges and governance, 7 points have been fully implemented, 3 have been partially implemented, and there's only 1 which hasn't been implemented. This point is in relation to establishing a grants database, so for the strategic programmes unit. This is also picked up in Christine's audit, which is at this committee at a later date. So it's going to be considered as part of the IT strategy, but there is no grants database at the minute. And then in relation to 2016-17, this is the report for those charts of governance, which is being tabled today. So these points are not yet due for implementation. But the next committee, we'll be hopeful that they'll all be implemented.
Okay, thanks for that, Gerard. Members, any questions, comments for Gerard on this item? Just Gerard, in relation to the grants database, so that will be picked up as a recommendation later on in one of the internal audit reports. So we can address that there.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, members. The next item then is item 10, which is the update on procurement. And Gerard, this is yours as well.
Yeah. Okay, so this is a standing agenda item since June 17, and it is now also on the corporate risk register, a new risk. So since the last committee, there has been a lot of progress. We have a working group set up, which is the Director of Corporate Services, Assistant Director of Finance and Estates, also the Purchasing Manager and Procurement Staff, and the Audit Services Manager. So the main achievement is the procurement policy and procedures for the Council was approved by the SCNR Committee on the 14th of December 2017, and this was subsequently ratified on the 8th of January 2018 by Council. So it's much like the risk management policy. So the revised policy doesn't introduce any new procurement practice. It's just making it more user-friendly for staff. Within the policy, there are now a number of links to new templates, such as business cases, tender packs, and conflict of interest form, so which make it easier for staff to carry out a procurement process. And it will also improve compliance and governance of procurement procedures within the Council. This, in turn, will leave the procurement team more time to focus on exercises which have a greater value and therefore have a greater level of risk associated with them. However, procurement will retain an oversight role in all purchases made by the Council. So I suppose that the policy is included within the appendix, and included within the policy are two key tables, which in the pack are page 95 and page 100. So So 95 is really the different levels of procurement. So what you have to do if your procurement is 5,000, 30,000, 100,000. And then the table on page 100 sets out from start to finish the different roles people have within the procurement process and each step you have to take along the way when you're completing a procurement exercise. So future actions which the working group will progress over the coming weeks is training is being arranged for all staff in relation to the new policy, the preparation of business cases, the use of our e-hub procurement system and how to evaluate tenders, contract and also contract management. So this has been penciled in for January and February 2018. The contracts register is currently being revised to make it more informative for management to make purchasing decisions, and there's also going to be a payment purchase exercise completed. And also the internal auditors are going to complete a review of purchasing procurement and contract management at the end of February 2018. Thanks.
Okay, Jared, thanks for that. Members, any questions, comments for Jared on this item? Members could just welcome the update I'm pleased to see the progress that's been made by the working group also pleased that there's a revised procurement policy which has now been approved by council, which is a more simplified and user-friendly policy, and I think that will go a good way to help them to deal with some of the issues that have already been before this committee on, you know, the previous internal audit report on procurement. I think this will go a good way to rectifying some of those issues and also addressing the issue of procurement, which has been flagged up as well by the external auditors, and also the fact that we've now put on procurement as a separate risk on the corporate risk register. So it has been flagged up, and I do think that the procurement policy is a very positive step in taking that forward. One question I have is on page 100. And I'm just looking at the procurement cycle, and there's a very, very useful diagram. And I just see that for over 5,000, it steps out a process. And within that process, it seems to be implying the establishment of a project team. Will that happen in all cases of over 5,000, or just in some cases?
It's very much general, but a project team will be established as sort of as necessary.
So it wouldn't be in all cases. There'd be a need. So it's as and when applicable. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for that, Chair. Any other comments, questions? Thanks for that, members. So we'll move on now to item 11, which is prompt payments.
Thank you, Chair. This report comes to you each quarter. This report gives the figures for the payment of invoices to suppliers between the 1st of July 2017 and the 1st of September 2017. The table in 2.1 shows that there was 7% paid within 10 days. That has been a decrease from the previous quarter, which was 9%. And the paid within 30 days, there was 5,013 invoices, which represents 82% of the invoices that we received during that period. Again, that was a reduction from 88% from the previous quarter. And therefore, the period outside the 30-day limit has increased to 18%. The reason why there has been a decrease in the percentages is in the accounts payable section during from July onwards. We had three staff members, two off sick and one that had gone to another department but had not been replaced. And during that period, there was also holidays to be taken. We didn't recruit staff to fill that, as it would be an additional cost, but it did reflect in a deterioration in the percentage of prompt payment statistics.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Again, thanks for that. Members? Councillor Devlin?
Thank you, Chair. I suppose maybe going forward in terms of covering annual leave and stuff next summer, Ken, is there provisions made for that? I'm just conscious of maybe some of these suppliers might be small businesses that depend on cash flow, and I suppose that would be my concern.
We haven't put any provision into the estimates going forward, but we hope to have the not to have the same staff absences. There were actually two long-term sicknesses, which hopefully will not be the case next year. And there has been an indication, we run a report this morning that would suggest that the quarter ended 30th of December is a little bit better than the percentages that we are showing in this quarter. At the last meeting, I was asked to have a look at could we garner what the statistics were of invoices that we hadn't paid within 30 days and what was the length of time taken to to actually pay the invoices. We have tried to get that information, but it would need an upgrade from our existing some system suppliers. But we do have an average number of days to process invoices from receiving the invoice to making the payment. And in this quarter last year, the average was 21 days. In the March quarter, again, it was 21 days to pay the average invoice. In June quarter, it was slightly better at 20 days. And the September quarter, which we're now reporting on, is, of course, worse. And the average taken during that period was 26 days.
Okay, members, Councillor Hart.
Thank you, Chairman. It's just some of the same concerns. I know that there was a perception out there of the council that where small local companies didn't handle because it took too long to get paid off the council, you know, and we had done some work on that, and we don't want to slip back into that. But where we are dealing, like, we have to have some procedures in place that people's all sick. You know, we can't just put it on the long finger that surely, definitely for small companies and that, like, it would put off a strain on them. And I know we as a council, if we were expecting a payment, we wouldn't like to be told there's no one to make the payment. You know, there's people off sick and that. And the fact that there was two people off long term, we should have something in place. You know, we are a business. We can't do that. We're obliged to pay our suppliers and that in time. And I know that it's a one off, and we have made improvements in that. But it's just, we don't want to go back to that awful perception of the council that for local companies that it takes too long to get paid, that they don't even put in a tender to us.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for that, Councillor Hardy. Can those comments be taken on board? Okay, member. Can I just comment on the paid within 10 days and accept that this is not a mandatory target, but along the same theme of that both Councillor Devlin and Councillor Harding has raised, you know, I think that certainly for small suppliers, you know, the you should endeavour where possible to try and pay within 10 days. I accept that really for larger suppliers, you know, where the contract is maybe 10 days or 30 days,
will then obviously stick to the 30 days, you know, the terms and conditions. But again, as a means of helping those, you know, who are maybe having difficulties with cash flow in the current economic position, if something could be looked at, maybe that and where maybe this council sits with maybe the other councils in terms of really that statistic. At this moment in time, it's sitting in around about 7%, which is quite low.
Chair, I would like to think that with the new procurement policy that we have now just got agreed, and the training that is going to go out to the officers, that they will now have a good understanding as to how to raise a purchase order, a valid purchase order, to go on to the invoice, which makes the validation of that invoice much easier to process. And if we achieve that, the speed of paying invoices should improve.
Okay, thanks for that, Ken. Next item, members, is item 12, which is the NIAO Bribery Good Practice Guide. And Jared, are you going to take that one? Yeah.
Thanks, Chair. So the purpose of this agenda item was on the 14th of November 2017, the Northern Ireland Audit Office released a good practice guide for all public sector bodies, including the councils, on managing the risk of bribery and corruption. So the guide aims to help all public sector organisations and individual public officials how to identify bribery or corruption or how it might occur, highlight the key risks, and provide advice on how the risk can be countered both at organisational and at a personal level. So in the appendix is a copy of the guide, and also included within the guide is a best practice guide self-assessment checklist, which has been completed for Newry, Mourne and Down District Council. So the council is largely compliant with the majority of the bribery and corruption checklist. However, from completing the checklist, we have a list of actions to progress. So once completed, these actions will further strengthen our controls around bribery and corruption. So I'm not going to go through the self-assessment, but the four actions coming out of the checklist are that the council need to develop a conflict of interest policy. This was also flagged up in an internal audit report on the strategic programs unit, which Christine will table later. So the target date for the policy to be effective is the 31st of March 2018, and there is already a draft of it. The second action is both that the request for quotation and the invitation to tender documents. So these are included within the procurement policy and are one of the templates already mentioned. They will be updated to ensure there is a link to the Newry, Mourne and Down District Council anti-fraud policy and response plan. So this will be completed in January 2018. The third action is in relation to a standard terms of contract. The head of legal administration is currently developing a standard terms of contract, so for all procurement within the council. So this document will include a statement on the risk of termination of a contract where bribery or corruption is suspected or proved. So this will be completed in March 2018. The final action is in relation to those employees at a higher risk of bribery and corruption, such as those who are involved with grants, procurement, planning or regulatory functions. So the point was they should be given more detailed or tailored anti-bribery and corruption training. This was highlighted at the SMT-CMT governance session delivered by the Northern Ireland Audit Office, and it was agreed that the council would action this. So the target date for completion is the summer of 2017. So by the next audit committee in April, the first three actions will be completed, and we'll bring the progress of the actions, and then the final action will be completed in the summer.
Okay, Jared, thanks for that. Members, any comments, any questions, Jared? If I could just, Jared, just welcome the completion of the self-assessment. And I'm reassured by the fact that you've been able to answer yes to most of those. And the items that have been identified, that there's an action plan in place to take those forward. So thanks for that. Item 13 is Improvement Audit and Assessment Report 2017-18. And Johnny, you're going to speak on that one.
Yeah, sorry. The purpose of this report
Right, okay, thanks for that. Johnny, members, any questions, comments for Johnny on this item? Could I comment, Johnny, just on a couple of aspects? First of all, to welcome the fact that really that the council has discharged its duties and has received an unqualified audit opinion. And then really I'm just picking up on some of the issues that have been raised within it, and the first one is under governance arrangements in 2.4, where again it refers back to really the role of SPNR and the audit committee, you know, it does suggest that really that there should be the need for monitoring, and I'm assuming that really the item that's later on in the agenda is a monitoring report, where you are reporting back to SPNR as being the committee that is responsible for performance improvement, first and foremost, and then you're copying that into us, to the audit committee, so that we can obviously see what's been reported to SPNR, but not necessarily to do the work of SPNR, but if there was issues that that we had concerns about, well then it does give us the opportunity to pick it up. And I suppose really a good example of that is the internal audit report on planning, which is in draft at the moment, so it will not come to this meeting, but clearly there's issues in there that is affecting improvement, performance improvement within that. So that would be a good example of where the audit committee would be helping and monitoring that the performance improvement is achieved. The other thing that mentions is about the terms of reference, and this is something that I would acknowledge, is that whilst we at this moment in time have got all of the items and all the different things that have to be done for performance improvement in our audit committee work plan, we don't have it specifically referred to in the terms of reference. And I'm wondering, Karina, is that something that you'd like to comment or to take back and look at?
Yeah. With regard to the terms of reference, Chair, I know when we were formulating these and when we do our annual review of them, we look to certain best practice guides that are out there, and we have certainly taken a view not to write a terms of reference that was too tight. At the minute, the terms of reference do state that the responsibilities of the audit committee are to approve the planned activity, performance and results of both internal and external audit. And I suppose it was our understanding that any work of the audit office was covered by that particular responsibility line item as contained in the terms of reference. So we were of the view that it was appropriately covered. We do need to ensure that we don't duplicate work and have two committees both looking, and that's maybe the difficulty that we have, and And probably something that we need to maybe have a further discussion with the audit office as to how we can satisfy the requirements of our committee structure and ensure that we're satisfying their governance arrangements that they would see as best practice as well. So we can have another discussion with the audit office on the back of those comments, but certainly I suppose the overarching thing from this committee is we are bringing the reports to you, you are seeing them, and you are getting that level of assurance that FCNR are carrying out their role in scrutinising them in a bit more detail then. So something that we'll consider further in conversations with the audit office.
Okay, thanks for that. Doreena, Johnny, do you want to come back in?
No, I'll just echo the comments that Doreena has made. Yeah. I think one of the challenges the audit office has is that the 11 councils have approached the duty of performance in very different ways from a governance perspective. And yes, there are some councils who actually discharge performance through the audit committee.
Right.
That clearly is not the position of this council. As Doreena points out, SPNR essentially owns the council's performance.
Yeah.
The role of the audit committee, as she pointed out, is to provide assurance that the SPNR is doing that and the arrangements are in place.
Okay, thanks for that, Johnny. And then just another point, which is on item 2.7. Now, there's a reference there to the council's website. Has that been resolved? Because I see the website has been an important mechanism for getting information out to citizens.
Yes, Chair, we're happy to confirm that at the end of the last calendar year that a new website was launched with significant improvement what we had before, and the documents which the auditor refers to are now easily accessible on that site.
Right, okay. And just a final question then in relation to the monitoring arrangements for the improvement plan. How often does that go to SPNR, or is that done on a frequent basis?
There's actually an item later on, which is the mid-year report. We take two reports on an annual basis to SPNR, one every 6 months, and then at the end of the year, which gives an assessment against the performance improvement objectives for that year, and indeed any other areas the council has prioritised around its performance.
Okay, thanks for that, Johnny. Members, any other questions, comments on this item? No? Next item then is item 14, which is the NIAO change letter. Andrina, you're going to take this one.
Yeah, members, this is included in your packs for information, really. You'll see correspondence from Louise Mason, who's been the local government auditor now for a number of years, advising that she is due to leave the Northern Ireland Audit Office and stepping down from her role as local government auditor. And you'll see further letter then issued to councils on the back of that from the Department of Communities, advising that Pamela McCready has now been designated as the local government auditor. I would just like to draw your attention. The letter included in your pack says, with effect from the 1st of February, the department has since clarified that Pamela McCready actually takes effect from the 1st of January 2018. So it's really to bring that change in local government auditor to your attention.
Okay, if members happy to note. Thanks for that. Now, members, before we go into closed session, there's two items that are listed in closed session that we would like to bring out into open session, and that's item 16, which is the audit strategy 2017-18, and item 17, which is the annual audit letter for 2016-17. Are members content to bring those out into open session? Yeah, okay, so we'll take those now. Item 16, Colette, can you take us through the audit strategy for 2017-18? Yes, absolutely. So we're going to take item 17
the annual 16. Audit letter then. Yeah. So the annual audit letter brings to a conclusion the audit of the 16-17 account. And it is a summary document which councils are required to publish on their website. So it is a standard document for all councils, and the same wording is used for all councils. But I will point out to you any differences for this council. So I suppose page 3 sort of summarises what is included within the document, and most importantly is the top one, which indicates that the council received a
their financial statements were certified without qualification, and that we were content with the proper arrangements work that we carried out. So that was the result of our audit. So if I can bring you over then to page 9 of the document, and the rest of it, as I say, is standard. I'm happy to take any questions on it, but it's exactly the same for all 11 councils. So page 9 of the document, under the heading of absenteeism, that is the specific absenteeism figures for the council for the year ended March 17 and compares it to the previous year, and also provides an explanation which council gave us as to why that figure increased in the year ending 2017. So you'll see some detail around that. And then really the rest of the document, as I say, is standard. We have included at page 11 and 12 some outlook detail, which is around some things that are due to happen for council, and also for the form of accounts, which is on page 12, which is called Telling the Story, but I will pick that up again in the strategy, Chair. Yeah, so okay. Happy to take any questions on the annual audit letter.
Yeah, okay, thanks for that. Colette, any questions on the annual audit letter? Okay, so members are happy to note. Thank you. And we'll now take item 16.
Yes, so this is the audit strategy, and this is the audit strategy which outlines our audit approach for the accounts of 17-18, the current year. The strategy is slightly different format than previously. We've sort of jazzed it up a bit, so you'll bear with me as I try to get used to it as well, because it's the first one I presented in this format as well. The idea behind the new format was to make it more user-friendly, so I hope members will think that is the case. Outline on page 3 of the document the purpose of the document. So it is to highlight to the Chief Financial Officer and the Audit Committee on how we intend to audit the financial statements of the year ending 31 March 2018, and how we will be addressing any significant risks that we have identified, and then also how we plan to audit the proper arrangements, which is an additional requirement of the local government auditor, and then just any other matters of interest, which I'll bring your attention to, the planned timetable, fees and the audit team, and then other matters which we're required to communicate to you under our auditing standards. So if I can bring you over then to the next page, which is page 4 of the document, and you'll see that the audit committee should discuss whether it's in a little blue box at the end of that page, it should discuss whether our assessment of the risks to financial statements is complete, whether management has plans to take in place to address those risks, whether our audit response is adequate to address those risks, and whether financial statements could be materially misstated due to fraud or any other areas that that members have of concern. So we outline then on page 5 materiality, and we explain a fair bit about materiality, but probably for the first time it's quite graphical in terms of how we have gone about calculating materiality. So it's based on 2% of the previous year's gross expenditure, which is calculated out at 1.4 million. And then we talk about an error reporting threshold, and this is the amount below which we wouldn't identify errors to you, so it's a quite small figure of £25,000. In that narrative, we also identify the fact that materiality isn't always quantitative, that it can be qualitative, depending on the nature of expenditure, and we have given some examples at the bottom of that page, for example, around the remuneration report. So if there was a reasonably small error, for example, in the disclosures within the remuneration report of the senior management salaries, we would actually consider that to be a material item. And there are other areas there too, including our audit fee as well. So the next section is on in respect of our audit approach, and page 6 is really a general overview of how we use a risk-based audit approach, and issues that are around our independence, the management of personal data, and what we do with any data we collect during the audit, and then how we use the work of internal audit. So we liaise with internal audit throughout the process, and we seek to take assurance where we can. The scope of the audit and the detail on page 7 is very routine information, so I'll bring you across to the page 8, which is where we identify the significant audit risks. So we've identified one significant audit risk for this council in respect to procurement and contract management. And really that comes from the fact that we identified a number of issues during our 16-17 audit regarding weaknesses in procurement and contract management. And indeed, the council actually disclosed that they had concerns around procurement themselves in their annual governance statement for 16-17. So we will review the council's application of the procurement policies they have in place during the current 17-18 year and the subsequent management of any contracts in place, and we will perform sample testing of expenditure. So that's how we intend to approach that audit risk. We also have two presumed audit risks there which are outlined in respect of our auditing standards. There's a presumed risk of material misstatement owing to fraud, and we'll address that risk during the testing during our audit, there's a couple of normal ways that we do that. There's also a presumed risk of fraud and revenue recognition, but we don't believe that the risk of fraud and revenue recognition is material in respect of this council, but we'll keep that under review during the course of our audit. In addition to that, we also have identified two risk factors, which these are areas which we would keep under review during the audit, but we don't consider that they would impact the audit opinion. And the first of those, the one I referenced earlier, which is called telling the story. And this is a change to the presentation of the accounts for the first time in 17-18. The idea of telling the story within the accounts is that the accounts will now reflect the council's own specific internal reporting arrangements and make it more, akin to what you'd be used to seeing through your normal processes. So it is a substantial change for council, and we will look at that and assess that as the audit progresses, including how they have restated prior year figures. And then the second risk factor is in respect of asset management, and again we identified a number of issues over the controls of fixed assets during our audits in both 15-16 and 16-17. So we noted that council were intending to complete an asset survey, so we'll be looking at that and any potential impacts on the financial statements. So really, Chair, that's the significant risks and risk factors. Page 10 outlines the audit timetable, which we have agreed with management, and it is a similar timetable to previous year. We will be aiming to sign off the audit by the end of September 2018. The fees for the audit are estimated to be £63,000, and we'll be looking the council to deliver as they did before the accounts by the end of June. And then the final page outlines the audit team who are conducting the audit. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks for that, Colette. Members, any questions, comments for Colette on the audit strategy? Okay. I just note during that really there's a couple of audit committee meeting dates there to be confirmed. I think the April one probably is already set, but they'll probably need to obviously set the September one and go forward for the next year. Members, we're asked to approve the audit strategy, so if members are content, can I ask for a proposer and seconder for the audit strategy? Councillor Ryan and Councillor Hardy, second. Thank you. And so that brings us to the end of the open session. We're now have to go into closed session. So. The next number of items is deemed to be exempt under power of draft 3 of part 1 of schedule 6 of the Local Government Act Northern Ireland 2014. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information and the public, may by resolution be excluded during items of business. So can I ask for a proposal and second to go into closed sessions? Proposer, Councillor Hardy, and second, Councillor Gavin. So members, when in closed session, the following items were considered. Item 15, it was agreed to note the report to those charged with governance 2016-17. Item 18, it was agreed to note the internal audit summary report and to accept the change. And on the proposal of Councillor Moran and Councillor Ryan, to accept the change to the internal audit plan 2017-18 proposed. Item 19, on the proposal of Councillor Ryan, seconded by Councillor Harty, it was agreed to note the Big Stream Lessons Learned report and to remove the corresponding action from the action sheet. Item 20, it was agreed to note the Mid-Year Progress Report, Performance Improvement Plan 2017-18. And finally, item and agreed that the 2014 Condition Survey is taken back to SMT for discussion. And agreed that Councillor Hardy's comments re the Rural Development Programme be relayed to the Chair of the Rural Development Programme. Agreed that the planning draft summary report would be deferred to the Audit Committee in April. And then finally, item 21, on the proposal of Councillor Ryan, seconded by Councillor Moran, it was agreed to note the Voicer report and to refer monitoring of the actions plan to the RTS committee. So, members, if there's no other business, that brings our meeting to a close. And can I thank everybody for their attendance and contribution. Thank you.